Yeah, yeah.
And welcome back to Raps Rant, all things Raptors, all things NBA, hosted by Philip Marion and Patrick Harris. What a week.
Oh my God. What a week. What those last two games were incredible. As soon as the Brooklyn game ended last night, I was just like, get me on the podcast. Let's do a pod right now. I was so jacked.
I know. We should have actually done an emergency recording while like Bill Simmons typically does. He gets all excited and gets out there.
Yeah, man. It was a great week. I'm so pumped. It was the perfect lead-in to Super Bowl weekend. So let's get right to it.
Yeah, I got to say one thing. I mean, for me, naturally being a pessimist and negative, it's nice to be wrong because, you know, when you are wrong, it's usually a positive thing with your team and positive development. So I am much more positive about the Raptors as a result of that week. And it seems like things are starting to click a bit. Hopefully I'm not jinxing that, but let's get into the games. So we're doing this a bit early for Super Bowl, so we're going to miss the Atlanta prediction, but 3-0, two wins against Orlando, predicted well by us. I'll give us some credit. First game, Saturday, we won 115-102. Siakam leading scorer with 30 points. The next game at Orlando, we'll get into this in detail, but historic night, Raptors franchise record for points by Van Vliet, 54 points. They win 123-108. And then the big win against Brooklyn. We'll get into some of the weirdness of that game with Kevin Durant, but solid win. You know, at the end of the day, you still have Irving and Harden, and that's not an easy team to beat. So on the road, great win. Raptors, we always expected, 123-117. Siakam, the leading scorer, player of the game, though, was 100% Lowry. And, yeah, let's I mean, do we really need to talk about the first game on Sunday? It seems kind of the other two games are just so spectacular that it seems like no point.
I couldn't even tell you what happened in that first game now.
I'll say this. It was at least it's kind of solidified. You know, Siakam had a great game against Sacramento, a losing effort, and he followed it up with another great performance, 30 points. So I'll give Siakam was a big key in that game. And I think once again he's not shooting threes. He's borderline historically bad at this point over the past couple of weeks. I think he's literally like 2 for 28 or something like that. Something really horrific. But he really is getting comfortable down low, and his finishes at the rim are getting much better.
I totally agree. And I thought he looked really good in all three games this week, even the second game against Orlando when he only went for 12 points. I still thought he looked good out there. We're going to talk about him specifically a little bit later. But, you know, I tweeted out, you know, after the second Orlando win that, you know, it's these two wins would have been business as usual at any time for the last 7 years. But because of what we've gone through this year, it was nice to see. It was a confidence building win, something we can build off of. And then we walked into Brooklyn and showed that it was just that. So I'm really, really jacked up about this week. Excited about tonight's game against Atlanta. It was an incredible week to watch basketball.
Well, so I mean, let's jump into Fred VanVleet.
Huge.
I can't say anything more about him, how incredibly special he is. How special that performance was and how deserving he was to have a performance that great. He has put in so much work, so much effort, and it's really a good feeling to see that guy get rewarded with a game like that. And I say rewarded like he did it himself, so I'll take that back. But, you know, when you look at how special that was, franchise record, 54 points. But the true for all the stat nerds out there with true shooting percentage, I won't even get into the calculation because it's kind of absurd. But at the same time, there's only the true shooting percentage is basically your points over, you know, how efficient you were with shooting. So it includes 3-point percentage, 3-point shooting, free throws, and just regular field goals. And he was a 101% true shooting percentage, which only five times in the history of basketball that's been done. And he is the only person with over a 50-point game to have over 100 true shooting percentage ever. So it was literally one of the best performances in the history of the NBA that we all witnessed.
Absolutely. I remember thinking when he hit his third three, just it was his night, and it was unbelievable. And he, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he hit his first nine or 10 threes.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
It wasn't just that, though. He was, I don't know if you noticed, it wasn't like a selfish ball hog type game for him either. He was passing out of double teams. He was driving and looking for the pass. He was taking it to the rim when he needed to. He was playing, his defense was on fire. The guy had three blocks, for God's sakes, as well as his normally high amount of steals. Like, it was just an all around incredible game for him. And I love to see it. You know, it reminded me of Fred VanVleet circa game 6 against Golden State.
Well, it just, I mean, just when I truly, the excitement of that game, I couldn't sit down. I just kept, well, every time he shot the ball, it was just so much joy watching that. There's only a few moments, like how many moments in Raptors history have you had that? I mean, even there was the DeMar game where he scored 52, which was just super exciting. The Donyell Marshall game back in the day where he hit 12 threes. He's still the franchise record for
three in the game for the Raptors.
Well, that's what I was saying. Vince Carter playoffs. Like, what other big moments are there other than those? Like Terrence Ross, I guess. I mean, that was a special night. So there's not many. So you just truly had to sit and appreciate it. And he was 17 of 23. 11 of 14 from three, 9 of 9 from the line, 2 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks. Just amazing.
Incredible. And
Kyle Lowry had a triple-double.
Well, that was one of the underreported things. Raptors don't tend to get a lot of triple-doubles. And that's, I think, Lowry's third of the season. It was really nice to see. And it was just a great all-around game. And I'm glad that we were able to do a back-to-back with Orlando so they could be our human punching bags for the beginning of the week.
Yes. There's something wrong. Like, I don't know what it is with, you know, certain teams, you just don't have that confidence. And Vucevic has been playing out of his mind this season, and he just had a quiet evenings, just completely not impactful in the game. They just don't have a lot of confidence against this Raptors team, which, hey, I'll take it. Don't care. We needed them. We needed those wins. We got them and went on to the Brooklyn game, which to start off, do you even know what happened? Durant's in the warmups. He gets pulled out, and then he's back in the game. What was it, like the 8-minute mark of the first quarter? I really didn't understand how the protocol measures can go that quickly. Was that something do you have more information than I do? Like, what happened?
I was watching on with the sound off because I was talking to some folks on the computer, and so I was wondering. I was like, Durant doesn't start anymore for Brooklyn. Like, what the hell's going on? I was like, is this some like weird analytical thing that Steve Nash is trying to do to balance minutes? And then I saw him come in, and then I didn't realize because I didn't have the sound on until later. It just seems to me like it's a really ridiculous contact tracing protocol gone awry. And I think this is really highlighting the need to sort of figure this out because it's thrown a lot of questions out there, right? He was playing against Toronto. He was sitting on his bench with his team. So like, can they play? Are they not supposed to play? Like, he's not on the team bus to Philly or the team flight to Philly, but he sat on the bench with all these guys last night. Like, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. It's obviously highlighted by the fact that it was Durant doing it. And just one thing I want to say, Phil, I don't give a shit what any of the haters say. The same people who say the Raptors wouldn't have won the title without Durant, or we wouldn't have won last night without Durant. I don't care. It's what happened. We won, you know.
Yeah. That's sports. That's what happens. Blame the NBA for that COVID protocol. You never should have played the game. You're pulled out for a reason. Why are you getting back in there? That was star treatment if I've ever seen any. That Brooklyn game, though, was quite frustrating. You get out to the big lead. Obviously, I mean, the Brooklyn Nets, when they started scoring, they erased a 17-point deficit in what felt like 1 minute. And it was just actually absurd to watch that juggernaut execute when they're rolling. It was, it's just scary. So they stood up to that, which was amazing. But they also, I felt, maybe this is the huge bias, I thought the refs were absolute garbage. And it really was upsetting me, for up to the point where KD should have gotten his fifth foul and they reversed that call. I mean, in what world was that not a foul? Like, Powell was about to get the ball and he just body checks him in the way. How is that not a foul? Anyway.
I think that, I mean, the Raptors, I think, are, if not the most, the team that fouls the most in the NBA, they're top three. And so, you know, I didn't think the refs, they overturned a call for us late in the game. You know,
that was not a foul though. He blocked him.
Sure. Like, but I'm just saying, I didn't have a problem with the refs. The Raptors, need to be more disciplined. It's not every referee in the NBA has it out to get us.
I'm not trying to be one of those. Let's put it that way. I usually complain about Raptors fans. I mean, I think we've gotten our due respect over the years. I think, you know, who cares about national TV games? We're just not going to get them. But I mean, it was really, it was the on the offensive side, the screens, like I think they called back to back on Baines. It was just absurd. And there was no movement. It was just bad.
Philip,
we got the result we wanted. I'll leave it at that.
No, you're not going to leave it at that. I got something else to say. Philip, you know full well that stars get calls. And when you're playing on a nationally televised game against a team with three future Hall of Famers, they're going to get calls. It's how it goes. It's just the way the NBA is. But anyway, listen, we shouldn't dwell on that. They played an incredible game. They held Harden and Irving to 32 points, which I know speaks to a bigger coaching play that I think you want to talk about. The defense was incredible. I think Harden and Irving had 10 turnovers, I think. And just a really solid display. And between Pascal and Kyle, you know, they really showed up. And that's obviously stating the obvious. They each went for 30 and 32 or 33. But it was just a really good team game to watch. And when you don't have your best perimeter defender and OG Anunoby on the floor, which puts a huge strain on your bench as well, to have your big guys step up, that's what they're supposed to do. That's what we've been waiting for them to do all season. And Phil, I'm calling it. I think we've been talking about it all year. I don't think we need to ask questions anymore. I think the Raptors have turned the corner. We're 8-4 in the last 12 games. And I think this is the Raptors team that we're going to be seeing this year. I think the first, you know, the 2-6 start was growing pains. 2-8, sorry. But I think that was growing pains, and now we're learning from it, and we're going to be a better Eastern Conference contender for the rest of the season.
Well, I mean, we're in a good scenario. We'll get into sort of the standings in a bit, but I'll comment on the Brooklyn game in a bit more detail. Just from last week, I brought up, hey, is it time to question Nurse for all the change in lineup and all that thing? It seems like he's got a good sense of who he wants to bring in from a defensive perspective. Bembry's been playing well. Watanabe's been playing very well defensively. Stanley Johnson, we've commented on him before. But I think the important thing was we saw Nick Nurse at his best again last night from the defensive standpoint. He was making sure that if we were to lose to Brooklyn, it was not going to be to Harden or Kyrie going off. So when you look at how they structured the game, and they were suffocating on the perimeter whenever they got the ball. So Kyrie Irving was 6 of 12. Harden was 4 of 8. Now, he went to the line 9 times, but when you have Jeff Green shooting 12 times, Shamet shooting 11 times, and the ball was just being spread around to those other guys to try and beat us. So I look at that as a great strategy. It's one that Nick Nurse has used before. It actually, an example of it is last year against Houston. Nurse did it against Harden, kept the shots very low, but Houston was lights out shooting. I remember Ben McLemore hitting like 8 threes in the game or something along those lines. And it was just one of those moments like, hey, you know, tip your hat. They beat us today because the other guys stepped up. So Nurse is still in there. I'm going to shut up about Nurse for a long time and not question him. I thought that he did an excellent job. Yeah, that being said, let's go into it. I mean, they've turned the corner. And my question to you, I mean, we've talked about a number of times. Is that directly correlated to Pascal Siakam coming out? Three of the last four games, he's been 30-plus points. He's getting a lot of assists as well, which just shows that his intelligence on the offensive end and reading the double teams is getting better. I really like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think that's been the key. And Pascal has been doing – it's like he listened, Phil, to our podcast last week because he's been doing exactly what you and JB were talking about, which is taking it to the basket, forgetting about the three-point shot. Every once in a while in a game, he'll be like, wait, do I still suck at shooting threes? And then he'll miss, and they'll be like, yep, still suck at shooting threes. Okay, I'm going to stick to my game. He started off a little cold last night, and I was really worried because he was doing a lot of the one-legged jumpers from the free throw line. And I was like, and they were short, which drives me crazy. Like, he's brought it back together, and I'm really excited to see if he can maintain that. And I think, you know, I'm not a basketball coach, but I just have to believe that if he stays off the 3-point line and keeps taking it to the basket, he's going to open up opportunities for his teammates, and he's going to be able to pump those scoring numbers up. And if he's our best player, he has to be. Like you saw Fred last night. He went cold. I think he had 11 points, and Kyle stepped up. But we need that consistency from Siakam.
We need one guy to be consistent. You're exactly right. We need someone to be game in, game out. Pascal's got to average 23 to 24 a night. You just got to know it's there. You know the defensive intensity is going to be there. There was one moment in the game last night. So he seemed a little hesitant and afraid, and he was doing those one-foot fadeaways. And I think whether it was Lowry or the coaching staff, and said, what the hell are you doing? All of a sudden, he took it to Durant one-on-one in the post, and he kind of bullied him on one play and did this little baby hook shot or baby floater. And I was like, there you go. I got all excited because that was just the right move. And he did it a few more times after that. You just saw the confidence come back, and bam, that was it. He was playing.
It's one thing to do it against Orlando. It's another thing to do it against the, what many believe to be the best team in the NBA. And so, no, I was really happy to see it. I think it was funny when last night's game, I kept expecting the Brooklyn run, and I was sort of sitting at home watching. I was enjoying the game. I was getting excited, but I was waiting for Brooklyn to just sort of run away, go on that, 20-4 run in the fourth, and it didn't happen. And by the end of the game, I was standing up. I was pacing around my condo. Oh, yeah. I was cheering. And, I think the through the guys like Kyle, I mean, Kyle never lost it, but through Pascal, him getting his swag back, I think this team has got its swag back and seems to be firing on all cylinders. You know, I still don't think, Phil, that we're going to compete for an Eastern Conference championship this year. But what I will say is I think we are the toughest out in the Eastern Conference. And if you're Philly, Boston, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn, we're going to be the one.
You don't want to face us first round. Yeah, you don't want to face us first round.
Play us in the first round, because we can do to any of those teams what we did to Brooklyn last night. And I will say the thing that's really heartened me about this week has been we've done it without OG Anunoby. And, we joke on this podcast a lot about OG, but he brings a defensive intensity and a pretty reliable offensive numbers to every game. And so, one of the things but one of the things I was going to say is that, my biggest, the bench has been a big worry for me this year. You mentioned Bembry and Johnson, and I've really enjoyed watching them come off the bench, and I think they've really earned their minutes. But that's been through their intensity on defense and their ability not to screw up on offense. They're not really adding to the game. They're hitting the occasional shot when they need to. But with OG out, and Norm starting, Boucher's really the only offensive spark we have off the bench. And so, you know, I think we really need to get him back in the lineup so that we can strengthen our bench and take some minutes off our starters, because especially guys like Kyle and others, like, these minutes are going to start to wear on them. You know, it's funny. I say that at the same time as, like, we say this about Kyle Lowry every single year, and it doesn't really seem to have an impact. But I think just generally speaking on the whole team, you know, getting that bench strength up is going to be important for the stretch run.
Yeah. We've catapulted into the eight spot. And when you look at, it's really three teams. Boston had a good win last night against the Clippers, but they didn't have George. But, and they're 12-9. There's nothing special about that record. Pacers 12-11. Knicks are 11-13. Followed by Hawks 10-12 and us 10-12. So the 4-8 seed, yeah, it's up for grabs. So we're in a great spot. I hope we continue it.
Yeah. Well, do we want to talk about tonight's game?
Sure.
So we got, like, we did this podcast today because we wanted to, we didn't figure there'd be a lot of people wanting to listen on Super Bowl Sunday. But we've got the Atlanta Hawks tonight. Atlanta is coming on coming off a 3-game losing streak. Pretty good teams there playing Utah, Dallas, and the Lakers. Last game against Utah, Trae Young was also hurt. The rest of their team's pretty banged up. Bogdanovich, Hunter, Dunn, all out. We still have OG out tonight. But Phil, we were talking about this before the pod. This is like the ultimate trap game for the Raptors. So, you know, Atlanta's coming off a losing streak, very injured. Trae Young still questionable for tonight. Raptors are riding a high. But if you think about all the other things at play, like three game winning streak for the Raptors, two huge emotional games coming on a back to back. This has trap game written all over it. And so, I just hope that that the Raptors show up tonight and don't mail it in. Just with the week they've had, and, you know, they're going home, which is Tampa, which is where the Super Bowl is being played tomorrow. Like, there's just, I just feel like they could overlook this game. And, you know, when you're playing the Hawks, like John Collins, Gallinari, even Rondo, Capella, like, this isn't a team you can sleep on. So, their Raps are favored by 4. This should be a winnable game. So,
they got to take care of this game. They got to do it. I mean, that's if they lose this one, and I think you're absolutely right. This has trap game written all over it, but they got to fight through it. And I expect to see the consistency of Pascal. We need to see him score 20 plus. Fred is due. If you look back, actually, the first game against Orlando, Fred was 1-7 from 3. Rest is history. The next game, and then obviously last night, he hits a 3. I will say he hit a 3 when it mattered against the Nets last night. But Fred's due. I think it's Pascal and Fred are coming back, are coming for a game tonight. I feel good about Watanabe. I think he is going to have a few threes. He's playing well. I think he'll get some minutes against this team.
And
defense first. They just got to put the effort up there. The offense will fall.
I think that's right. I'm pretty bullish on tonight's game. I think the Raptors cover that 4-point spread, and we take our 4-game winning streak to Memphis. We have another week on the road after Atlanta tonight.
Yeah.
We're in Memphis on Monday, and then we have a back-to-back, Washington and Boston. And so 4 games this week, all on the road: Atlanta, Memphis, Washington, Boston. Phil, what's your prediction?
I think we're going to go 3-1. I think our winning streak continues and we win the next 3 games. Boston is where I think we lose, just because it's the second night. It will be at the end of a long road trip. That's my thought. I think Memphis is in a position where we can take the game. Washington is Washington. We better win that one. They stink. And I'd like to just see a competitive game with Boston, but I'm not going to hold them to it given the length of this road trip, the emotional wins, and Boston starting to show signs of picking up a bit. That is all I've got to say about that. I just I like what I've seen with the Raptors over the past, like you mentioned, 8-4. They easily, very easily could have been 10-2. And it is coming from a pride on the defensive end. You're seeing a lot more activity. And that's what has been the backbone to the team and has to continue to be.
So I think our record is going to be the same, but I think we're going to get there a different way. I think we're going to beat Atlanta tonight. I think we're going to have a letdown game against Memphis in Memphis. And then I think we're going to shred Washington and have a, I don't know. I just feel like the team's going to get up for Boston. And I think we're going to be, I think that'll be a game when we'll step up and win. It's funny. Like, those are the games we have to win, right? Like, if, when I look at this week's schedule, the only game I want to win is the game against Boston.
Yeah, I agree.
So
I just think it's a, I think that's a schedule loss, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's
but well, around the NBA, we actually, there were rumors, I don't know how strong they were, that the Raptors and Washington were in talks about Beal. But the offer, or what Washington wanted, was so absurd, it's even hard to share. They wanted Siakam, OG, and 2 first-rounders for Beal. Do you think that's a good deal?
I do not.
Yeah, and then apparently that was just immediately shut down. So, yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to, you know, if you could get Beal for the right price, that's something that's obviously they were talking for a reason. But, yeah, it goes back to what Gareth was saying a couple weeks ago, our guest Gareth Wheeler. And he was just in the mindset of knowing the organization and Masai is going to look for superstars. He wants the superstars' talent. And, yeah, if you don't get Beal, he'll continue to look elsewhere. But I think if he's not going to – I think now when I think about it, this team has shown that they're turning around and they should be a playoff team, that it's just going to remain the way it is. Unless he can get some sort of special piece or star. Otherwise, this team's playing out the season.
Well, one of the things that, like, when you talk about Beal and you talk about what you'd have to give up for a guy like Beal, yeah, he's a difference maker for sure. But what does Beal do to this team? Like, it's not going to be a huge addition over our current backcourt. We've been talking about all year. The hole in this team, the Achilles heel of this team is in the five. Yeah. We see it in our steals per game is actually better. It's the only sort of team metric that the Raptors have that's improved upon over last year, with the exception of points per game, which is essentially the same. But steals per game is better. Our perimeter game is fine. Our rebounding is atrocious,
yeah.
Both the offensive and defensive end. And so when I look at what we should be thinking about for a trade, I mentioned it before. I think we should
Drummond. Like
Drummond, man. He's the friggin' leading rebounder in the league. Like, I don't know about fit and analytics and all that shit. I know that if you have a deficiency in rebounding, going and get the league's leading rebounder is usually a pretty good way to plug that hole.
That's a good analysis.
But he's,
I'll take that.
He's $28 million salary. He's got 1 year left on his contract. Does it make sense to give up options for that? No, it doesn't. I guess I just mean that more from a context of, if we're going to be looking for someone to bring in, let's look at someone to fill that hole that we have as opposed to filling a hole that we don't.
Well, I'll be curious. I mean, here we're getting right now. We're February 6th. A lot of the players that are trade eligible are, you can trade now. So I think up until the deadline, if this team can continue winning and all of a sudden is the sixth seed, 6 or 5, do you then go for Drummond pretty aggressively? Because if you had a guy like Drummond, does that change the dynamic of the team to actually start competing?
I don't know if Drummond will be around by then. I don't think Toronto's the only team that's in need of him. There's been a ton of talk about him going to Brooklyn, but I think for the same reason that it's tough to get him on Toronto, it's also tough to get him on Brooklyn. But yeah, absolutely. I would love to see them make a move. To fill, because I just Baines, like, he works hard. Looks like he's putting an effort out there.
He's just not talented enough. I mean, I admire his effort recently. He's played some good games from his perspective of how many minutes he puts in. I mean, he's getting around 10 to 20 minutes a night, depending on how well he's doing. But yeah, non-factor. He's not the guy who's on the floor at the end of the game. I don't think he's played. Have you seen him in the fourth quarter ever? He's really never there. So yeah, I mean, sure, Baines has been a fine fit. I'm not complaining, nor do I really care about
his. He's been a fill. He hasn't been a fine fit. He's been a tremendous disappointment. And
correct. All right.
I don't want all of our listeners to think that we have something against Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines is a serviceable NBA player, but he's not. He's not someone you bring in to replace a guy like Marcus Gasol and Serge Ibaka. It's just, he's not that guy. He should be coming off the bench, and he should be filling in, giving Serge a break. That's what his role in the NBA should be.
I agree. That is a very good point. Next thing, All-Star game. It was brought up that maybe there should be one. A lot of players are speaking out against it, most notably LeBron. I just don't care. And I would tend to agree with the players at this point. I think the players are, it's about their safety. I mean, they've come out to make the fans happy and continue supporting fans to watch the games and going through all this protocol. They did the bubble for us. Like, you need to throw a parade them out for an All-Star game. I think it's a bit of greed on Silver's part.
Yeah, I happen to experience a lot of the All-Star weekend when it was in Toronto. And I think anyone who's ever lived in a city where it's been or been part of it would know that the actual All-Star game is a very small part of what the weekend is about. And it's parties, it's a big celebration. And it really takes over a whole city that it goes to. And so if you can't have that element to it, that's what the players go for. They go for that camaraderie and that party. They don't, I mean, the game is, I think, in many cases secondary to that. And I will say that it's been a great game the past couple of years, but I totally agree. If you can't have the whole thing, then it seems like it's just greed on the part of the owners to get that game going. And it doesn't, it's very counterintuitive to what the NBA has been about and what we're dealing with in terms of the pandemic. So I say, yeah, scrap it. Move on. It's a weird season. Let's just get on with it. Keep people safe.
Yeah. And it's really insane. I mean, the only thing I would maybe do, I don't know, maybe you say, let's have sort of a virtual dunk contest where guys are set up in some gym and they can throw some dunks down and people can have virtual votes, et cetera. And you can have Kenny and crew, like, on a Zoom call to look at it. I don't know. Something. You can do maybe something on those lines, but that's it. I mean, like, come on, guys. We're in a pandemic. All-Star game. Give me a break. That actually is unacceptable. And it's made the list, and that's the one this week. Very unacceptable. Disappointing.
Yeah, I haven't been following it too closely, but is Silver actively pushing this idea of having an All-Star game?
I could be completely wrong. I just saw a couple. I didn't read too much on it. We'll put it that way. But I just saw that a lot of players are against it. A lot of notable players. Like, we're not talking about the guys that would obviously make the All-Star team and the stars of the league are not for this. So,
yeah. No, I saw Kawhi, Harden, Giannis, they all followed LeBron yesterday saying it. So, no, I think we're agreed. No All-Star game this year would probably be the best way.
All right. Do we want to reiterate? I don't think there's much to talk about on the Western Conference. It seems to be shaping up how we thought it would. You've got two of the stronger teams. Utah, I'm convinced Utah is going to fizzle out at some point, but we'll see. They are a bit of a regular season team, so they might keep it up. But it's the LA, it's the Laker Clippers show over there. Eastern Conference is still up for grabs. I'm not convinced on Philly. It should be an interesting run at the end of the season. See what happens. But yeah, We'll end it there. We're going to reiterate our thoughts on the Super Bowl quickly. I'm still going with Mahomes and KC.
Yeah, Phil. So I did a poll on Instagram. I used this. It's the first time I've ever done that. And if it was, I think 58-42 for the Bucks to cover 3.5. I noticed you voted Mahomes in that. I'm going to lay out my case for Tampa Bay, which I'm not very confident in. And then maybe you can lay out your case for KC. I think Tampa Bay's, it's COVID, so it's crazy. Tampa Bay's at home. They're all sleeping in their own beds. And they're going to be ready. Tampa Bay has guys like Sue and Evans and the rest of the receiving corps, whose names are drawing a blank right now, who've never been here. And so, like, this is the biggest game they've ever played, whereas all of KC's guys won it last year. You got Brady. You've got – and then when it comes to the actual game, I just think that Tampa Bay set up very similarly to the Cleveland Browns, where they've got a good pass rush. They've got a very strong running game, and that's the recipe for beating KC if you're going to do it. I never bet against Tom Brady. So,
well, it's hard to. Yeah. Well, it's a very good case.
One thing, Phil, having said that, KC is incredible, and I have this is the least confident Super Bowl bet I've ever made, but I'm sticking with Tom.
The only reason I would say for all those guys that don't have the experience in the Super Bowl, can you imagine playing it with Tom Brady? I mean, if there's ever a person that can manage that game appropriately, it's him. Never panics, rally the troops. And you remember the Falcons. Yeah, just being down that much. And the whole time he just kept yelling, focus, focus, next play will break it. Next play will get us back in the game. Next play, one play at a time. Over and over. So he'll do that no matter. I expect the game to be close. I'm not a Tom Brady fan. I never have been. Doesn't mean I don't think I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time, hands down. Doesn't mean I have to like him. But my reasons for going with KC is I think Mahomes is just he's just stellar. I think that he has the weapons all around, and they have a good enough defense and coordinator to rush Tom and make him uncomfortable. So yeah, I expect a very good game. I'm mainly picking KC just because of my dislike for Brady, and that's the only reason. And I'm not truly a football analytical guy, so that's it.
If Mahomes throws an underhanded pass to Kelce on the 1 yard line for a touchdown, I may throw something through the television. I don't know how many times that guy gets to get away with that play. It drives me crazy. But yeah, listen, everything you said, I agree with. Definitely could go either way, but my money's on the Bucks and on our Toronto Raptors tonight against the Atlanta Hawks.
Let's go. Raps are back, baby. Until next week.